From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Russia's foreign ministry spokesperson, Maria Zakharova, held her weekly press conference in Moscow on Thursday, and we bring you as much of that as time allows.
Good afternoon. Traditionally, I start with the schedule of the foreign minister. On the 29th of November, Moscow would receive the special coordinator for the Middle East peace process, Nikolai Mladenov. He is going to meet Foreign Minister Lavrov, and afterwards he would have talks with the ministry deputy, Mr. Vershinin. In the course of these talks, he would exchange views on the prospect of the settlement of the Arab-Israeli conflict against the backdrop of the recent decisions of the U.S. aimed at thwarting the international recognized legal basis for the Middle East settlement, among them the acknowledgement by the U.S. of Jerusalem as the capital of Israel-occupied Syrian Golan Heights as Israeli territory. The recent steps that violate international law include the statement of the State Secretary Pompeo that the U.S. doesn't think that the Israeli settlements in the West Bank of the Jordan River are illegal. The meeting with Mr. Mladenov would allow to discuss the ways out of this stalemate. Russia will continue putting efforts to aim for the fair solution of the Palestine problem that implies the establishment of an independent and sovereign state of Palestine with the 1967 borders, with the capital in East Jerusalem. This is what the legal international law documents prescribe. It's symbolic that the meeting would coincide with the Day of Solidarity with the Palestine people that is celebrated by the international community, including the UN. On December 2 to 3rd, Mr. Lavrov would visit Baku with the official visit. His program includes talks with the president of Azerbaijan, foreign minister of the country. He will continue dialogue on the key issues of the development of Russian-Azerbaijani relations in the political, economic, and cultural and humanitarian areas. He's going to sign the consultations plans of foreign ministries for 2020. The gradual development of the Russian-Azerbaijani partnership is provided for by the intense political dialogue at the high and highest levels. In 2019, there were two meetings of presidents of our respective countries on margins of the International Forum One Belt, One Road, Beijing, 26th of April, and Valdai Forum, Sochi, 3rd of October. From 20th to 25th of November, the first vice president of Azerbaijan, Ms. Aliyeva, visited the Russian Federation. There's a tight cooperation between our governments, parliaments, and civil society organizations. The mutual trade upon the outcomes of 2018 grew by almost 14%, and this equals to $2.5 billion. In September, it grew by 26%. Thus reaching the point of $2.2 billion. We successfully implement roadmaps on the key avenues of our bilaterals for the period up to 2024. Azerbaijan has joint enterprises, that is about 200 companies with the 100% of Russian capital. The Intergovernmental Commission on Economic Cooperation is also successfully acting. We have cultural and humanitarian as well as educational cooperation. We had successful Days of Culture of Russia in Azerbaijan, and in 2020 we will have Days of Culture of Azerbaijan in Russia. Baku has the functioning affiliates of the Russian University of the Moscow State University of Lomonosov. Russia has more than 11,000 Azerbaijani students, and 1,000 out of them are studying for free. We cooperate within the CIS, UN, OSCE, Non-Alignment Movement, Council of Europe, Black Sea Economic Cooperation Forum, and other international fora. We focus on the issues of regional security, including the prospects for the Nagorno-Karabakh settlement. On December 5th and 6th, Sergei Lavrov will participate in the OSCE Ministerial Council that will take place in Bratislava. Russia wants to have an interested and constructive exchange of view on the status of European security, common challenges, and opportunities for cooperation of the OSCE member states. We expect that the discussion would contribute into the restoring of conference and military political de-escalation and would facilitate the increase of influence of the organization in fighting transnational challenges, would give an impetus to the settlement of conflicts that it is in its charge, and would allow to have a consensus approach for the thorny issues of cooperation in the economic, environmental, and humanitarian dimensions of the OSCE activities. In Bratislava, Russia would focus on the fragmentation of security in the Euro-Atlantics, the growth of tensions because of the confrontational policy of the NATO to retain Russia, and the reinforcement of its military infrastructure close to our borders. We would also stand for the principles of the Russian delegation to stand for the indivisibility of security and the role of the OSCE as the platform for dialogue and equal interaction of member states and its unions. The Russian delegation would support efforts of the OSCE in the settlement of conflicts, including in the east of Ukraine, Transnistria, and Nagorno-Karabakh, and its co-chairmanship in the Geneva discussion on the stability in the Caucasus countries and its work in the Balkans. We also plan to highlight the problems of the violation of national minorities' rights, attempts to segregate and discriminate media, the growth and march of aggressive nationalism that is witnessed in Ukraine, countries of the EU, especially the Baltic countries. For the Ministerial Council upcoming in Bratislava, Russia has prepared a significant number of drafts on an important topic. This includes the 75th anniversary of the end of the Second World War that has been jointly elaborated with the OSCE Forum, as well as the 20th anniversary of the Charter of the European Security, Platform of Security, the behavior of media in fighting terrorism and extremism, the strengthening of the role of the OSCE fighting terrorism, the reinforcement of the OSCE in the problem of the drugs, the access to information, as well as the language and education rights of national minorities. All of this includes more than 20 drafts of document. On the margins of the Ministerial Council, Mr. Lavrov would meet ministers of the member states and the leadership of the OSCE and other international organizations. We are going to provide the details of his meetings. From 5th to 7th of December, Mr. Lavrov would visit Italy. Foreign minister would speak at the conference, the Mediterranean, the Rome Dialogue, and would have a number of bilaterals on the margins of the event. He would have talks with the new foreign minister of Italy. This is going to be their first personal meeting after the new government of Italy was formed in September 2019. During the talks, they would exchange views on a wide range of issues of our bilaterals. In the first place, to implement the outcomes of the official visit of Russian president to Rome in July this year. We expect that they would focus on international issues, including the settlement of regional crises in Syria, Libya, Ukraine, and situation in Latin America. Besides the schedule for bilaterals, would be provided later on for you. We'd inform you and advise you on this later on. Now, on the main international agenda, situation in Syria remains difficult in the territories not controlled by Damascus. In Idlib, the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham continues daily shootings and shellings of more than 20 positions of Syrian government forces and the local dwellings. They try to take on new territories. In the de-escalation zone, the locals are trying to demonstrate against this terrorist lawlessness, but the militia try to thwart these demonstrations and protests. Obviously, the Idlib problem would not be solved unless the terrorist groupings designated as terrorist ones by the UNSC would not be eliminated. The Russian-Turkish memorandum of October 22nd tries to stabilize the situation. There's a joint patrolling along the Turkish-Syrian border. Besides, we do our best to decrease tensions along the perimeter of the Turkish zone within the peace spring operation. Besides, there are sleeper cells in the Euphrates, and we witness an increasing number of terrorists trying to raid Kurdish commands. The U.S. forces stay in the oil fields in the northeast of the country to loot the national resources of the country. We always assess these international and legal lawlessness committed by the U.S. and supported by the armed forces, by these military and political grouping of the U.S. Such acts cannot be logically explained, given that Washington endlessly speaks and raises the issue of the legitimacy of the actions of Damascus and casts doubts on this legitimacy, but at the same time, they do what they do without any connection with the international law, and we stand for the restoration of the unity and territorial integrity of Syria based on the dialogue between Damascus and Kurds and other representatives of this region. And I'm talking about Arab tribes, Assyrians, Armenians, and others. The task is to overcome internal contradictions to provide for the stable consolidation of the Syrian society. We think that there's a need for a just provision and protection of the interests of all ethnic and confessional groups of the Syrian society without any discrimination and violation of their rights. Besides, the Syrian Constitutional Committee continues its work in Geneva. 25th of November saw the second session of the drafting commission of the committee, made up of 45 representatives of the government, opposition, and civil society. We need to support the process of political settlement of the Syrian crisis through the intense boosted international efforts. This includes the humanitarian aid to the country without any politicization and discrimination. This would contribute to the volunteer and secure return of refugees and IDPs to their homes. Starting with July 2018, when we launched the respective Russian initiative, more than 476,000 refugees returned home. Besides, there's been 1.3 million IDPs. On December 10th to 11th, Nur Sultan would have the 14th international meeting on Syria in the Astana format. This would include the participation of guarantor countries, that is Russia, Iran, and Turkey, delegations of the Syrian parties, including the government and the military opposition, as well as observers, that is the UN, Jordan, Iraq, and Lebanon, and experts from the UNHCR and ICRC. The agenda of the event covers the wide range of issues, including the situation on the ground, the humanitarian situation, help with the return of the Syrians, and attempts to advance political process and confidence-building measures, as well as the exchange of the prisoners of war. To achieve lasting and sustainable settlement of the Syrian crisis, we need to normalize the situation around Syria. That is why we need to help the country out of the international isolation. Here we highlight regular visits of various delegations to Damascus. Last week, Syrian capital was visited by the parliamentary delegation of Germany. The head of it stood for the settlement of conflicts without any external meddling, and he stood for the restoration of cooperation between Berlin and Damascus. Besides, the Damascus Diplomatic Club, for the first time since 2011, held a benefit bazaar with the participation of 12 countries, including Russia, Argentina, Bulgaria, Brazil, Pakistan, Sudan, and others. The Director General of the State Hermitage Museum, Mr. Piotrowski, went to Damascus on the 25th of November to sign an agreement between the Hermitage and the Directorate General of Antiquities and Museums of Syria. These include the restoration of the Antiquities of Syria. At the same day, the National Museum of Damascus opened an exhibition called Tour Palmyras, which includes architecture, photos of St. Petersburg and Palmyra. As you know, Russia does its best to restore the cultural and historic heritage in Palmyra. The whole world was shocked by the colossal damage done by terrorists to this historic place, the heritage of the civilization. We hope that the Russian efforts would be supported by UNESCO. Afghanistan, we paid attention to the news and materials with the testimonies of war crimes committed during various periods by the British servicemen in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as the journalist investigations that highlight the connivance by the politicians and special forces of the UK towards these servicemen. I am talking about specific cases that we read from these media published recently. I'm talking about 52 murder cases of the locals by the British servicemen in Afghanistan in the period up to 2017. The litigations for some of the cases were closed because no charges were brought forward. The British Special Forces killed four Afghani children. I'm talking about a British soldier. Children were not doing anything wrong. This was not any terrorist activity, no extremist activities. They were just having lunch at home. The defense minister official said that those were ungrounded fabrications. The large-scale investigation of the British police called Operation Northmoor proved that the British Special Services counterfeited documents to shift responsibility for the killing of unarmed persons onto the Afghani army. The investigators have footages that show that the unarmed Afghans were killed by British military and not the Afghani ones. So according to media, and we have all the links, we have all of the articles, you besides perhaps also have them, all of this was published in 2017. So the Defense Ministry of the UK wanted to hide this from the media because they thought, quote, the publishing of the investigation details can damage national security, public confidence, and the work with the allies, end of the quote. I think that This quote alone is enough to understand the scale and approach of the British authorities when they try to keep secret these facts and data when we are talking about significant international issues and problems, and in general, perhaps even the deliberate disinformation, deliberate tempering of facts and various circumstances while committing these provocative actions. And we witnessed such provocations many times when they were prepared and orchestrated by the UK officials. So the proofs and evidence gathered during the investigation were called by London, quote, credible and very grave, as well as catastrophic for the government. The investigations focus only on the British servicemen, but if we are talking in larger terms, in wider terms, and at a different angle, such crimes were committed by other states as well. In particular, there were statements on 17 affected Afghanis. We need to double-check this data, but we're talking about Afghanis, including the murder in 2014 of 7 children as a result of wrongdoings of New Zealand military who did not demine in a proper way the shooting ranges after using them. It seems that these crimes were done because of their attitude towards locals, their disrespect towards them. These are outright attempts to hide these facts, and they try to fight terrorism, stabilize the place, but we are talking about some second world countries and second class people who could be victimized for the sake of someone's interests. The attempts to hide such facts generate the feeling of impunity. We condemned such crimes against civilians in Afghanistan, and we call for British and New Zealand authorities to finish the investigations and to punish those accountable for them. We want the commands of foreign military who are located in Afghanistan to do everything to prevent such crimes in future, because without such justice, we cannot count on the victory over international terrorism. Another topic
that we have to comment on, given the questions we receive from the media, in particular the implementation of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action on Iran's nuclear program. As you know, on the 6th of December, the JCPOA Joint Commission at the level of Deputy Foreign Ministers will be held. Such meetings are held every 3 months. Main goals are the following: to create conditions to step-by-step implement JCPOA, taking into account the responsibilities taken by the member states, and to protect the agreed projects from any external attacks, above all from the US attacks. We count on substantive and productive negotiations covering all comprehensive arrangements implementations, which need to be to enjoy the broadest international support and additional efforts from all JCPOA member countries aimed at sustaining its resilience and stability of the plan of action. On the 12th of December, it is also planned to consider the latest UN Secretary General report in New York on the implementation of the UN Security Council Resolution number 2231. I'd like to remind you that this very resolution approved the JCPOA. As always, we hope that the opinion of UN leadership will be balanced, objective, and will contribute to stabilizing the situation around the JCPOA. As you know, since May 2018, when the United States declared its withdrawal from the nuclear deal, there have been no easy periods in implementing the JCPOA. Washington ostentatiously refused to implement the UN Security Council Resolution number 2231, and it's a serious challenge to the system of international relations based on this UN and Security Council centrality. This fact, coupled with the unpreparedness of the European countries to create conditions necessary for Iran to acquire trade economic benefits from participating in the nuclear deal, is the very reason of those challenges that JCPOA faces. And no wonder that many countries in Western many colleagues in Western countries prefer to speak in soft voice about it or remain silent on the matter. They try to shift the focus of the international community attention to the fact that Iran suspends respecting its commitments under the JCPOA, but at the same time, as usual, nobody reminds us that JCPOA is based on carefully designed balance of interest and principle of mutuality that was undermined as the result of the unlawful U.S. actions, because they withdrew from the JCPOA and they did not respect the arrangements that were reached. And we pay tribute to regular statements of Iran regarding its preparedness to respect its commitments under the JCPOA when its lawful interests under the nuclear deal are respected. And those who constantly criticize Iran, we see publications, official statements of some countries, and those who criticize Iran for its nuclear actions, they sweep under the rug very important details, like, for example, Iran completely respects its commitments vis-à-vis EIEA, and they suspend their activities on the elements of nuclear deal that go beyond the NPT and the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement. Apparently, the uncomfortable truth for them is the fact that Iran remains one of the most inspectionable states by the EIEA, and it carries out its nuclear activity under its permanent control. The major role in this plays the implementation of the additional protocol to the Comprehensive Safeguards Agreement. We are convinced that our colleagues should stop thinking of Iran as of an object of completely making unlawful efforts, as of an object with which they can do whatever they want. I'd like to remind you that Iran is an equal partner in cooperation based on the JCPOA, and we proceed from the understanding that all parties to the JCPOA should be equally interested in preserving the JCPOA in its full comprehensive implementation, as is stated in the very name of the JCPOA, according to the parameters, conditions, and deadlines which were agreed upon in 2015. Commitment of all parties involved was reflected in the joint statement after the ministerial meeting in New York on the 25th of September. This is the starting point for further discussions in the JCPOA Joint Commission as well as in the UN. We think it's counterproductive to always try to find out who needs the JCPOA the most. We think that its preservation is a common goal for all parties to comprehensive agreement signed in 2015. Moreover, time and tendencies that take place in the world show that there is no alternative to this document. We also paid attention to a publication which was viral in the media, the publication of WikiLeaks website. We are talking about the OPCW expert letter, about the fact that OPCW fact-finding mission on the use of chemical weapons in Syria manipulated with the data of investigating incident in the Syrian city Duma on the 7th of April 2018. as well as we took note of the analytical materials that were published in connection with this publication. I'd like to remind you that this letter touches upon many issues, including those who are being raised for a long time by Russian and foreign specialists. Russia and a number of other countries many times questioned the justification of conclusions that were provided.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.